Welcome to episode 9 of the Setlist Audio Club, the music podcast by two dudes who know nothing about it. On this week's episode, we're featuring music by the White Stripes and MGMT, namely their highly acclaimed releases Icky Thump and Oracular Spectacular. As always, we absolutely cannot remain on topic for the life of us. So, enjoy our little side conversations and stories as we take a deep dive into the early to mid-2000s. And with that, I'll get out of the way. Enjoy. So, I got two haircuts last week.
All right.
And, Val, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I tried to find time. I needed a haircut. It was dire. But you were booked out too far. So, I decided to call an audible the Saturday after the snowstorm. And risked it and went over. There's a barbershop and, like, a strip mall, like, literally 5 minutes down the street. And the reason I knew it was there was because when my dad used to live here, he and I would go, and that's where he would get his haircut.
Nice.
And I got haircuts there a couple of times, but I didn't remember who it was that had cut his hair, who had cut my hair. You know, I just knew that is where we went, and it was like an old, classic-looking barbershop, dilapidated as hell. Super old dudes cutting hair. Like, I'm not kidding you. No way they're a day under 75 years old.
Nice.
They're Vietnam vets.
That's the barbershop. So, I like those barbershops. Those are my favorite.
They were perfectly reasonable. They were perfectly nice. It was a really cheap haircut. Like, my expectations were not super high coming into it. But, you know, there is a certain amount of expectation you have when you get your haircut about what it should look like and what you're used to getting.
It should at least not suck.
Right. Skipping straight to the point, this was horrendous. So, I have really curly hair,
right?
For those who don't know me.
Like very curly. Like, he actively grew an afro in high school.
I did. Yeah, it was like a 3-inch afro all the way around my head.
Yeah.
I grew it out for like, I don't even know how long it took me to grow it that long. Yeah. It was like 6 months or something like that.
Not long.
But my hair is really curly, so it's really hard to deal with. When you cut it, because my hair grows in every direction. It doesn't just grow straight out of my head.
Like mine.
So all of my hairs go a different way. And one of the things I've learned over the years of getting bad haircuts is the person that doesn't go multiple directions to make sure that they've cut all the hair the same length usually end up missing a lot. Well, this guy, legit, I asked for him to do a taper on the side. So shorter, closer to my ears, and then longer as you get towards the top of my head, and then leave a little bit of length on the top so I have something to do with it and I don't look like a skinhead.
That's fair.
That was the bare minimum, right? This was okay. If you can do a taper on the sides and make it not look like shit, I'll probably be okay.
Yeah.
He cut all of it to one length. Okay. Then he cut the entire top to one length, did not bother trying to make it look seamless between the sides and the top. So it looked like I was wearing like a shitty hair hat.
Nice.
Yeah. And all to make things worse, all the hair on the top of my head was not cut to the same length because he literally did it like boot camp style where he took the clippers and went backwards starting from my forehead.
Well, yeah.
Which like I get it. If you're trying to hog off a lot of hair, that's the way to do it, right? You want to get rid of it as fast as humanly possible.
Sure.
So, like, I didn't have a problem with it, but he just straight up missed a lot. And I actually didn't know that until I got my second haircut when the dude told me. And he was like, yeah, all your hair is not the same length up here, so I'm going to have to fix that. Anyway, it gets worse.
Oh, no.
So, you know how if you get your hair cut short, whoever's cutting your hair will usually do a detail around the ears.
Oh, yeah.
Go up around the scoop of the ear and then down in the back. He did that. With really big clippers, and on one side it was like squared off, and on the other side it looked like he hadn't touched it at all. And then my sideburns were like an inch different, like one was an inch higher than the other one.
No.
And it was so funny because we're sitting there talking and I'm like, yeah, I've had my fair share of bad haircuts in my life, like I know when it's bad. And he was like, oh yeah, like definitely don't want you going home saying like, who butchered your hair? And I was like, well, I will definitely get that if it's bad. And he just straight up like He fucked my shit up, dude. It was bad.
Damn.
I wore a hat for 4 days.
You hate to see it.
And I'm not a hat guy. You know that. I don't wear hats.
I used to not be a hat guy. And then I just realized sometimes I just don't care enough to do anything with my hair. Because mine's very long for people who don't know. Like, we have very opposite heads of hair.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'm very much a hat guy nowadays because I work around food a lot. So, like, I'm always wearing a hat anyways.
Yeah, you have to.
Right. Because I don't want any of my hair in my food because that's gross.
And neither does anybody else.
Right.
So thank you for wearing a hat when you're at work.
You're welcome. All of my guests and customers thank me.
But, yeah, I think the main reason I'm not a hat guy is because my hair is curly.
Mm-hmm.
And what hats do is they just compress the hairs against my head. And where your longer hair lays down and it can lay in a direction that ends of your hair aren't aiming directly back into your scalp. When I wear hats, they aim directly back into the top of my head. So they just get itchy. Like my head gets itchy and I have to like adjust my hat a lot because I can't leave it in the same spot forever. And it just mats down to your point.
Mm-hmm.
So I wore a hat for 4 days after this $13 haircut. And I had to
I don't feel ripped off paying 20 now.
I don't either.
I'll pay the 20 if I can avoid a bad.
Yeah. But see, like, 20 bucks for like a good haircut.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
Yeah.
I'd pay more than that.
I would not pay more than that. Are you kidding me?
Well, so.
No, because I would sooner take a bad haircut than pay more than $20 for a good one.
You would rather have a bad haircut.
Right. Because I don't mind
more than $20 for a really good haircut.
Right, because for me, it's not as much of an issue.
How long is a good haircut take for you?
Usually about 45 minutes.
And you don't think that's worth more than $20?
Not entirely.
For 45 minutes of applying a very specific skill set?
Look, I've already had this argument with a ton of people. I have my stance on it. I'm not changing it.
I guess you're okay doing
like,
that.
There's, I get that there's a highly paid skill. Like, I understand it takes a lot of, I get it. Used to date somebody who threw this in my face all the time and told me her job was harder than mine. And I said, you're wrong, but
it's not a competition.
Right. That's
first and foremost.
For her, it was. But, there's also what the market's going to pay and, as an economic side of it, I'm not paying more than $20 for a haircut.
I would say you're very much in the minority.
Sure.
So
I've been told that, and I'm aware. I probably sound like an asshole, but you know what? That's just me. It's why I only get a haircut twice a year.
Yeah, okay. So you don't have a worthy opinion of hearing anyway about the topic, because you barely ever get haircuts to talk about.
Yeah, and every time I go, it's to Val.
Which is about a $20 haircut.
Right, and then I tip her like $8.
Yes.
Because I like Val.
Yeah, I do too.
Because she gives me good haircuts.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah.
Val does a really nice job. I never have a problem when I leave her. Leave her salon. So, yeah, I got the one bad haircut, wore a hat for 4 days because I walked out of the first barbershop and immediately grabbed my phone, got on the apps, and like found the next nearest barbershop that didn't look like a dilapidated cardboard house.
Yeah.
For lack of a better term.
That's fair.
So there's this place on the other side of town I went to, and I walk in and I'm wearing a hat. And I greet the guy who's cutting my hair, and he's like, so what are we doing today? And I took off the hat and I said, well, I had a haircut like 3 days ago. And as you can probably tell, I need it redone because it was horrendous. So I walked him through everything that had happened, and dude, you'd have thought I'd been shot. Like, everybody's like, oh my God, where did you go? Who did that?
Name names.
And I didn't know the dude's name. I asked on my way out the door, but I already don't remember.
That's fair.
The dude's name.
That's
but
fair.
He was a really nice man. Like I said, he's definitely not a day under 70 years old. And the dude who cut my hair the second time is definitely not a day over 30 years old. So there's probably like at least a 40-year age difference between the two.
And which one gave you the bad one?
The old guy.
Experience doesn't make you good, old people. Know that. we're better
experience
than
you. Is good, but skill is better. So
we're young, we're taking over the world, so we're gonna steal your pension.
Yeah, so I had to switch it up the way that I was getting my haircut, because I normally get it done like I usually do like a 1 to a 3 or whatever on the side, but
sure,
because they had messed it up so bad and gone really short with that like edge detailing up around the ears, I had to go to skin like halfway down my head.
Oh my god.
It actually looked and felt great.
Aerodynamic. Walk out of there going, I am speed?
I didn't feel like that, but like I felt so much more confident when I left, because I like knew that my hair didn't look like I'd been hit by a bus.
See, I like looking like I got hit by a bus, because then people don't expect anything from me.
Yeah, I guess that's like a under promise, over deliver type.
Exactly. Exactly.
I'd rather people look see me like I know what I'm doing, because most people won't give you the light of day if they don't think you know what you're
talking
about.
In my industry, you look for the, like, for you, professionalism is key, right? I'm a cook. Like, we look for the scungy looking dudes, because I'm like, he's going to make the best ribeye you've had in your life. He might look like he does meth. He might do meth.
Meth is definitely on the table.
But he's going to make you the best dinner you've had in the last probably 20 years. You want, like, I would, like, we just, you learn to grow an appreciation for, like, the shiftier characters of your town.
Diamonds in the rough.
Very rough. Diamonds in the coal stage.
In diamonds embedded in a lump of coal.
Yeah, right. Diamonds before they're diamonds. Literally just lumps of coal.
Pre-diamond
diamond. Pre-diamond diamond. It's a diamond. Oh, God. Diamond larva. That's the word I'm looking
for. Larva.
That's the word I'm looking for. Larva. It's
like a parasite. Right. I guess that's pretty on brand too, right. Isn't it?
It is.
But, oh my God, dude. It was the first haircut, dude. It was laughable. We actually hung out with our neighbors on Sunday, and I wore a hat the whole time. We were inside the whole time.
Yeah.
And they were like, what are you wearing a hat for? And I was like, because I got a really bad haircut. Everybody, as soon as you say that, everybody is like, let me see it.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm like, hard pass.
Right.
No.
Maybe next time.
Very embarrassing. There is something, actually, on that note, one of the guys I used to work with at Fusion in Grandview.
Yeah.
I think his name was Chris, but he was a barber. He went to barber school, and that's what he did most of his time, and then he worked part-time at Fusion,
okay,
which is where I met him. And he was talking about, he was like, you ever notice something? A man who just gets his hair cut feels so much more confident, like, leaving the barbershop with a good haircut.
I never feel that confident.
You never feel like... Mm-mm. You've not ever had a haircut worth talking about then.
Probably.
But, like, there's something about, like, looking good and, like, feeling good and you, like, getting exactly what you want. Like, if you want a certain look and you know that you can pull it off and then they deliver it and then you walk out of that building knowing that, like, you're executing to your own vision. There's something that there's like a sense of self-satisfaction there that like is understated. Like I don't think people fully appreciate how they feel when they leave having just gotten a haircut.
I don't think I have ever had that feeling.
Well,
I need
the
to go,
exception.
Where then. Do you where was this magical haircut from?
It's a barbershop called Dax Barbershop.
I'm going to go
over
there
next
time.
Next to have I taken you to Red Shed yet?
Barbecue?
Yeah.
No, but I've heard of it.
Yeah. So it's like right over there off of Columbus Street or whatever.
Yeah, it's like over by Benny's, right?
Yeah. It's like right next to it.
I've passed it.
So Dax is between Benny's and Red Shed.
Oh, that's perfect. We can get a haircut together and then go get pizza and hot gossip. We can have girl talk.
Or we can go get barbecue.
Or we can have girl talk. That'd be fun. I like girl talk.
Girl talk's fun.
Girl talk is fun.
But yeah.
Or we could get barbecue. Barbecue's always good.
But yeah, they did a great job, but this guy was telling me about it because obviously he had gone to barber school and they probably teach them that. Like,
probably.
Hey, the psychology of giving haircuts is like you're almost doing them a service for their mental state and their like confidence level. Again,
I don't think it's an understated thing.
It's not something that's like super obvious.
I don't think it's taught at barber school, but I feel like there's people that just feel that naturally because they enjoy what they do and they want to do it the best they can.
You mean from the barber's perspective?
Yeah.
I'm talking about the guy who got the haircut.
Oh. Oh, yeah.
I'm talking about I sit in the chair and I get a haircut and I leave feeling like a new man, like a new level of confidence. Like I'm strutting my stuff when I walk out of the barbershop.
Yeah, no, I know. But you're saying that like...
I'm saying they probably teach the barbers to know that information so that
I mean, maybe
they feel inspired to do a good job always.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. I think we're putting a little too much stock in the American education system, to be honest.
I mean, yeah. Definitely.
Definitely too much stock.
Definitely.
All right, we should probably get around to...
Yeah, where are we at? Music almost at 20 minutes?
20 minutes, and we haven't even talked about which album we're doing.
All right. Welcome to episode 9. We're almost done with season 1, wow. Fam.
Episode 9. It took us way longer to get through all 9 episodes than I thought we would.
Yeah, this was supposed to be a weekly podcast.
It did not.
It has turned into like a tri-weekly. We release one episode a month, and some of them are poorly produced. That's my fault.
I mean, we're both fully employed people with full-time jobs, so...
Yeah, and I don't, like, own a full-fledged recording studio, so apologies for the iffy sound like, quality and there's like echoey stuff.
There's a dog kennel, like, in the room with, like, we're just in a room. This is not, like, a... We ain't fancy people here.
I want to make a recording, so I want to put something in the basement where we can record.
That would be pretty rad, yeah, actually.
And do some, like, soundproofing and, like, really make it a thing.
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
You could do it, and then, like, when we're not recording, move your drums in there, just so it insulates a little more.
Well, I'd build it around the drums that are down there already.
Oh, you're just building that corner?
Yeah.
Nice. That's probably, yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
Than moving your drums.
Yeah.
Because I'm a shithead.
But, yeah, welcome to episode 9.
Woo!
We're almost there. Almost one more episode after this.
There. Oh, my God. And then we have season 2.
Yep.
We have to do it all over again.
We gotta come up with a game plan. We've had a lot of good ideas as we've come across this. So this has been a good learning experience.
I've started taking mental notes of like stuff that I want to do next season. We're gonna talk about themes. I want to do a themed episode every episode. So we're gonna come up with a bunch of themes. Spoiler alert: one of them is gonna be called Marathon Monday.
Okay.
And it's gonna be an hour and a half long album at the minimum.
Oh fuck.
Buckle no. up. Yes.
Kill me.
No. It's going to be...
You already know where I stand with album length.
I know.
An hour and a half hour and minimum? A half.
Marathon Monday, baby.
Jesus.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, enough talking about the future. Yeah. Let's talk about what we're supposed to be talking
about. Let's talk about the now. My parents live in Ohio, but I live in the present, baby.
Ayo. So, this week we have two... I would say they're like... They're not so totally different.
I wouldn't say they're not as opposite as like a lot of other albums we've done. They're coexistent.
Yeah, they exist in the same universe.
I wouldn't say they're super similar, but like no.
One's definitely more like garage punk and one's more like psychedelics.
Yeah, so let's introduce the one that's the garage punk. So it's from the illustrious band The White Stripes. Very much not a hidden band. You know them. You love them. Jack White's core group. It's him and his actually ex-wife.
Yep.
And one of the fun facts that I learned, I got on the Wikipedia pages and started doing some reading. So Meg White is actually super shy and she doesn't like sharing a whole ton of personal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually portrayed themselves as brother and sister.
Yep.
While as a band on purpose.
Yep.
And then it wasn't until like 2001 when they, after they split, that it was revealed that they had been married the whole time. So like when we were talking about it the other week,
mm-hmm.
you were like, I thought they were brother and sister. So it's probably because you heard from that.
No, I knew they had been married.
Oh, okay.
I knew they had been married, but I didn't think they were married anymore.
Oh, gotcha.
I was like, I'm pretty sure they're not married anymore, but I know they were at some point. I knew they were husband and wife.
Mm, okay.
But I thought it was funny because I thought it was a joke.
The brother
and sister thing I thought was like a practical joke they were playing on their audiences. It kind of is to that point,
right.
But I thought they were doing it to be funny, not because...
That's just what the wiki page said. So like it might have been a joke thing. It could have been wrong.
I thought it was like a little bit of like a comedic hit that they were playing it up as brother and sister to be weird about it.
Very well might have been. Jack White's a weird guy. Pretty weird
guy. Did you know his last name's not actually White?
No, it's you have the keyboard. You look it up. I have a phone. I'll look it up. It's less noise. I did know that, but I don't remember what his last name actually is.
Well, it doesn't matter. He took Meg's last name when they got married.
That's
Meg's
very,
last
that's very,
name was White.
That's very on brand for Jack.
Yeah. So when they got married, he just took her last name, and then henceforth they are both known as, you know, Jack White and Meg White. Hmm. But he just held on to it. They got divorced actually after their second album.
They yeah, didn't even they got make divorced it through in
two albums. They were married for 4 years, 1996 to 2000.
2000. I was trying to remember if it was 2000 or 2001 when they got divorced.
Yeah. But yeah, it was right before their second album was about, they were about to go in and record the second album is when they got divorced.
Gotcha. Yeah. So anybody that's wondering, his original last name is actually Gillis.
Yeah.
But yeah. And his real name is John. John Anthony Gillis.
That's why the name Jack is a lie.
Yeah.
Like, what, John and Jack aren't even the same. Like Jackson. I mean, Jack is short for Jackson. That would make sense. But
well,
like,
back in the day, it was like, it was just a, like, I don't want to say a pseudonym. That's not really the right word. And, but Jack was another name for John back in the like 50s and 60s.
And it's a lie.
I don't know, man.
It's a lie.
Grandparents, anywho. Parents are, I don't know. But anyways, the White Stripes, we covered a little fun fact already, but it's their, actually their final album they released together, Icky Thump.
Yep.
It's also, this is just something I noticed, but it was the only album they had that the main color scheme was actually just black and white, not with like a major red component. Like all of their album covers are black, white, and red. Like that's,
like a newspaper.
Right. Like that's their color scheme. And so Icky Thump was like very predominantly black and white with just like a little red sticker at the top.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Just stylistically, I thought that was kind of a cool little design.
Little homage.
But you see on the cover that they're kind of dressed like gypsies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think that's like on purpose because a lot of it's very kind of like shady driftery feel throughout the whole album. It's like especially in like Rag and Bone where you hear them going around and like asking people if they got any junk they want to get rid of.
Yeah,
they're just like, we'll take it from you, we got a home for it, we can do something with it.
Yeah,
but yeah,
it reminds me of that show Storage Wars.
Yeah, where they're that? Like again, they're like auctioning off storage,
the storage units. Yeah buddy.
Yeah, I thought it was I get that. I totally get that. So it's, you know, this isn't exactly an unknown album.
It's really well known.
It's very popular. So like, you can't really ask me where I found it.
No, I wouldn't ask you where you found it.
Because you typically ask me that every week, but this is not
this
one.
This album won a Grammy.
Yeah.
It won Best Alternative Album in 2008, and it reached number 2 on the US Billboard 200.
Yeah, that's
in
not
2008.
Surprising. That's not surprising.
So like, this was a popular album.
It was super popular when it came out. It's like the only White Stripes album I actually own on vinyl. So I was like, we should do that this season.
It's a good one.
I liked it a lot.
It's a good one to own on vinyl too. Mm-hmm.
It's good. It's good loud. This is not an easy album to listen to with your headset on.
I don't know. I disagree.
I did.
There's enough complexity there that I think there's enough to appreciate when you've got headphones on.
Well, it's not so much that it's like, I can't appreciate the complexity. It's that there's a lot of like just really big hit noises, like big, huge cymbals, really loud, screechy guitar, like just kind of bits and pieces that just like get really in your face really fast.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like I enjoyed it more when it was like on a speaker and in an open room rather than having my headphones on sitting at my desk, which is kind of fun because like MGMT was the complete opposite.
Yeah, that
was one that I really loved with the headphones on.
I actually didn't get a chance to listen to MGMT with cans on.
No.
Like all the way through.
Dude,
I've heard that album a bunch of times, so I'm already familiar with it.
At the very least, the first half of it. Mm-hmm. Side A, like with the headphones on, dude, it's rad.
Yeah.
But anyways, we'll get to that one later in the show. For now, we're talking about Icky Thump. So what did you think of it, like, as a whole, you know, as the White Stripes, like we said, not an unknown band at all. Very common, very popular. Everybody has an opinion on them, and I want to hear yours.
So, first and foremost, I like the White Stripes.
Yeah.
I like a couple, like, everybody loves Seven Nation Army, no matter how overplayed it is, kitschy, you know, very pop culture type. But I've always really enjoyed, I forget what's the name of their, they had an album that had a song called Doorbell on it. And I can't remember for the life of me what the name of that album was. But that song in particular is one that has stood out to me. Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of other songs on that album, because I remember we used to listen to it all the time as kids. But the White Stripes are... It's a band that I don't listen to all the time. And there's no reason why I don't. I just don't. But I do like them a lot.
Yeah.
Like, they're really good. This album in particular kind of caught me by surprise. I wasn't anticipating a lot of the tracks to be all that good. Mm-hmm. I knew the album had won a Grammy because it was on the like Grammy compilation album that year or whatever, but it was just the title track that was on that album. So like, I knew that song because it was really popular that year, but I hadn't heard much of the rest of it. And I was pleasantly surprised.
Good.
On my first listen through, I was like, you know what? These are really good.
Nice.
Like, I knew I liked Icky Thump. I didn't know why I liked Icky Thump, but I knew I liked it. What else?
So the song you just referenced, My Doorbell, actually came out on their 2005 release, Get Behind Me, Satan.
Yes. That's the name of the album.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah,
it's got the two of them standing like kind of back to back, and they're like each handing something.
Right.
Over to the other.
They're like white and the entire rest of it's red.
Yeah. That's like a big red curtain behind them. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't know why I couldn't think of that album name.
It's album names are hard to remember. Yeah. I liked the album. I liked it a lot too. Icky Thump, I thought it was a really good opener track. A good track in general, I think.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I was kind of like you when I first heard it. I was like, I don't know why I really like this. I just know that I really like it. But I can't like figure out what about it that I really like.
Yeah, I think a lot of what draws people to the White Stripes is the amount of like you don't have to, how do I put this? There is a lot of production that goes into what they do, mm-hmm. but it doesn't sound like it.
Right.
It doesn't seem like it took them a lot of time to put a lot of this together.
Yeah.
Just because the nature of the way that they play is so rough and tumble and is it imprecise? I think that's the word. Not unprecise, imprecise.
So just like
not precise.
So like what isn't precise about it?
Like the timing, the overall feel of the music is not. You know what quantization is? Quantization.
So let's go ahead and assume that I didn't play in a college marching band and say no.
You don't have to. That's not inherent to a college marching band.
Oh, well,
basically, the way music is divided is beats and then subdivisions,
yes. Okay,
right?
I do know what that
so
is.
So
yes.
If you play on a perfect subdivision, that's called quantized.
Okay.
So what you can do in recordings is... music software, you can record whatever, and even if you're out of time, you can quantize it and it will put it into time for you.
Oh.
And make it sound perfectly in time.
Oh, I didn't know
that.
But that
takes
a thing.
Most of the like feel out of it. It takes the human component out of it because like most humans don't have an internal clock that allows them to play that precisely. Like that's precision.
Right.
Right. They are accurate, however, because they play together.
Okay, right? And that's more important than being precise.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
So you don't have to play perfectly in time, but as long as you guys are playing the same thing at the same time,
right?
That's what matters.
Gotcha.
So they do an excellent job of staying together and being accurate with their notes and making sure that, you know, we're not playing with absolute precision here. But it's so close together that you can't discern the difference.
It doesn't really matter because they're in time together.
Yeah, they're playing together.
Okay.
And there's a lot of feeling that comes along with that.
I'm sure that's very much on purpose.
Oh, 100%.
Like that's
just the nature of what they do. Like,
right.
Neither of them are classically trained musicians.
No.
And Meg didn't even play the drums when they met.
No, she like just started playing. I think she just started playing.
Jack played the drums before she did.
Yeah, he actually.
Because he was in some other bands in like high school and stuff.
Do you want to know the name of his first band? Like his first professional band?
Oh my God. I know this one, but you're going to have to tell me.
It's called Goober and the Peas.
Nice.
He was the drummer for the band Goober and the Peas. It was his first professional gig.
Right. So Jack had learned to play drums and then he met Meg.
Mm-hmm.
And then she started to play drums.
Did he like, I'm assuming he taught her like.
I think he just like let her mess around on it.
Oh, and she just figured
it out.
And
then he probably provided some direction to gotcha. Be like, hey, you should play this. And then she would do it.
That
and
makes
it's
sense.
All fine. But, you know, neither of them are classically trained. Like Jack's just very much a learned on the job type thing.
Yeah.
You know, which is a perfectly reasonable way to learn it. And he's obviously gotten very good at it.
Yeah.
But just the fact that they don't, it doesn't feel like they take themselves too seriously.
Right.
Which plays well into how the listener perceives what they're hearing. And in particular for me, it has a certain quality to it that I can immediately appreciate. And it's not like, it doesn't sound like nails on a chalkboard to me.
Yeah.
Whereas like normally that like a lot of imprecision tells me like low production quality. It tells me low budget. It tells me, you know, these guys don't actually know what they're doing, but like Jack knows what he's doing.
Right.
At this point, like by the time they reach this album, they're well practiced. So.
Oh yeah. They're very, I mean, at this point he's probably been doing things with Raconteurs. He's probably been doing solo projects too. Like,
yeah, this is like the very end of the White Stripes. This is their last album. So
yeah, this came out in 2007, and it was like they released this and then they just took a hiatus and just like never came back.
Yeah, I think there was like an inkling that they might perhaps maybe release another album at some point, but I think most of that's been kiboshed at this point.
Probably.
Just said,
I mean,
it's not going to happen.
I mean, it's 15 years later and it hasn't happened, so it's probably not going to happen.
And I think there was some back and forth about like why they broke up, because obviously they had not been married for 7 years. It wasn't
right.
The fact that they were getting a divorce that they were stopping.
They could obviously still work together well as
divorcees. Could make it work. Yeah. But if I remember reading it correctly, it was that he felt like she was pretty uninspired, especially in the last two albums.
Huh.
That she just was like there for the ride, basically, and that he was running the show anyway. And like at that point, why hold on?
Yeah.
You know?
I mean,
you're holding on to somebody that is literally not putting any effort into making the thing that you're supposed to be working on together,
right.
You know? So like, why keep doing that when you could replace them with somebody else who cares and wants to do stuff and contributes ideas and that sort of thing?
Right.
I think I remember reading that somewhere. I could be totally wrong, but
I mean, it makes sense. So,
yeah. But yeah.
What were some of your, did you have a lot of like, what was, let's just, what was your favorite track?
Oh man, there's so many good tracks on this. It's really hard to pick a favorite. Honestly, for me, I think it's between Bone Broke and Rag and Bone.
Dude, same.
And I think it's Bone Broke.
See,
if I had
for me,
to pick one of the two.
See, I'm going to go Rag and Bone.
Bone Broke was really good.
They were both like super deep vibey blues.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's what I really, really liked, because they made really good blues music.
Oh, 100%.
Like, he is a fantastic blues musician.
Yeah.
And she's just apparently naturally just a pretty good drummer.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they were still making music. I really do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought I'd.
But
Rag
Jack
and
White's
Bone.
Had so much good music come out since the White Stripes.
Oh yeah,
that, like
he's.
I don't know.
Stopped.
I don't miss the White Stripes because I have plenty of other material that came out camp. You know.
Yeah, but it's just it would be more.
True.
I want more.
True.
But yeah, no, Rag and Bone. I liked that. Really kind of boppy, vibey.
The opening of that's really cool.
It's super nice. Yeah.
Where like Meg's like playing on the rims with her sticks and it's got that like clicky quality to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah, I like it.
Well,
anything you hated? What'd you hate?
Hate. Prickly thorn, but sweetly worn. Got a down plus for me, but
really?
St. Andrew got a hard down.
I straight up put no thanks.
Yeah, that one wasn't.
It was just too out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm usually
experimental in a bad way.
Yeah, I'm usually one for that kind of thing, but that was just not great.
Yeah, no, I didn't like that. What were some of the other tracks that you liked? I have several on here that all have like thumbs up ratings for me. Did you like Conquest as much as I did?
My note for that is literally Conquest.
Yeah, dude. So fun fact, you know where they met the trumpet player for that?
Where?
At their local Mexican restaurant.
I love it. Did you know they did a fully Spanish version of the song too?
I believe it.
And I actually used it in a high school project.
No way, really?
Micah and I, we had
Yeah, that's
part. We had course. Yeah. We had Spanish 2 together, right? Mm-hmm. And we had to do, I forget what the actual project was, but like it had something to do with music, and he was like, "Ooh, I know this really cool song from the band White Stripes that's fully in Spanish." And I was like, the whole thing. He goes, "Yeah." And he plays it for me, and like I didn't know it at that time, but apparently I really like garage rock at the age of whatever you are when you're in
probably 15.
So he plays it for us, and we actually played the whole video for class that day, dude. It was hilarious. But yeah, it was, cause it's a very, for people, if you didn't listen to the song, it's very like, Spanish Matador kind of sound.
Yeah, totally.
Like the music video is about a bullfighter.
Right.
And like, it's like a Matador fight. So the fact that it's entirely in Spanish makes sense, but it was, yeah, we got to use it for a Spanish 2 project. It was great.
That's cool.
I think we even got a B on it too. Maybe an A. If we got an A, I'd be surprised. She hated us.
Yeah, but Conquest was really good. Yeah. I like that one.
The 300 mile per hour
torrential outpour blues.
Yeah.
That one was good.
I thought that was just that really slow, simple drum line that's going on there. Mm-hmm. The vibe just dun, 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 dun. Guitar just going on the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
It was calm. It was vibey. And then out of nowhere, you just get smacked in the face. Like just really screechy guitar,
mm-hmm.
and then just cuts right back in.
Yeah,
I thought it was fun.
That like juxtaposition, the like loud against the soft, is definitely a thing.
Yeah,
but
it's like
that one got a mid plus for me.
It's like putting
my favorite track.
It's like putting chili flakes on your cheese pizza. Like the chili flakes give you just enough like zing to kind of cut through all that cheesy. Yeah, ooh,
spicy.
But yeah, so I liked all of the, anything, if it was blues on this album, I dug it. So like that one, Bone Broke, Rag and Bone, I thought was really, really good. A Martyr for My Love for You, I liked.
That one got an up for me.
Catch Hell Blue was really good.
Up minus for me.
Effect and Cause, I thought was like, whatever.
Man. Yeah.
I could have gotten rid of that and been fine.
Yeah, it wasn't, I think, bad, if I was going to get like, rid of a track though. St. Andrew's
definitely got to go, but like Effect and Cause, I was just like,
At least they spared us. At least St. Andrew's the shortest song.
Yeah, it's
on
only
the
like
record.
A minute half or something.
It's
like
minute
that.
50.
Minute 50. Yeah. All right, that's not awful.
Yeah,
I skipped it. But so what was just all in all was something that you didn't like? Like, was there something about the album that just like what missed?
I don't think there was anything in particular that like I hated.
Mm-hmm.
Aside from St. Andrew, but honestly, I'm struggling to find places where I think it could be better, just because like there are so many good tracks on here. I have 8 of the 13 tracks got at least an up from me, which is quite significant. That's a lot. And there was only 2 in the whole list that got anywhere close to a down.
Yeah.
And then even the Mez were like on the upper end.
Really?
Like close to an up minus.
So this all across the board scored pretty well for you
though. Yeah, it did really well.
All right.
Like, I understand why it won a Grammy, because like almost every song is good.
Nice. Well, I'm glad you liked it that much.
It scored really well for me.
I don't think I liked it as much as you did, to be entirely honest. Like, I like it, but
it got better as I listened to it too.
It's one that's got to grow on you, but it's just, I've been listening to White Stripes for a while. So it's like, these are all like, I've heard probably half of them before,
mm-hmm.
just like here and there.
Yeah.
Some of it was just, sometimes it goes a little too far, into left field, just like really abruptly, like on the 300 mile per hour torrential outpour blues.
Mm-hmm.
Like if he just didn't have that random screeching guitar noise, the loud on top of the quiet,
mm-hmm.
like I would have rathered it all just been like that mellow vibey tone with just kind of like a more acoustic, like guitar solo would have been really cool.
That's a really long song too.
It is. And I like that it's long. So
I don't know. I would have been really critical if they had just played the same guitar riff the whole time.
See, I like it when
for almost 5.5 minutes.
Well, if it was, all right, is it really 5.5 minutes?
5 minutes, 28 seconds.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. That is a little long for just that, but still it was just such an abrupt, aggressive change.
Yeah.
And my brain was just like, meh, do not like.
Does not compute.
No gracias. So yeah. So what is what's your beans?
I'm at 480.
Really?
Mm-hmm. 480. Okay. So that is,
that's
to me,
pretty good.
Better than Car Seat Headrest and Gallant. Definitely better than Gallant.
Yeah.
But not as good as Octavarium to me.
Okay.
Somewhere in that range.
Okay. I put it at 64.
That's pretty low.
It is pretty low.
It's like pretty middle of the road.
It's because I didn't. It comes down to like replayability. Like that's really what it comes back to so many times is like, how many times can I realistically listen to this album in a week?
Yeah.
You know, cause that's usually like what we originally planned on our schedule being, but yeah. It's not. I constantly found myself wanting to listen to our other album even more.
Yeah.
Every time I would like sit down to listen to them, I'm just like, let's start with this one first. And then I'd get distracted and just go do something else.
Mm-hmm.
And then forget to listen to Icky Thump. And I'm just like,
see, I was the opposite. Right. I listened to Icky Thump like the whole time.
Wow. Man,
maybe
we
that
really
had something to do with it.
Man.
But I was also really familiar with the other album.
See, I wasn't.
I'd heard it a bunch of times.
I
was really familiar with
it. I had apparently heard one or two songs without realizing.
Oh, yeah.
Who
there
were
two absolute bangers on that. On the next album. We'll get there.
We'll get there, but there's more than two.
Well, there were two that were like huge.
Oh, yeah. Two that are like super duper popular,
yeah,
and still
super
are.
Mega hits.
Three. I know three of the top. Anyways, we'll get there. But yeah, so we'll get to that when we get to that.
So where are you with bean ratings? Oh, yeah. You already said
64. Yeah.
So that is what? Better than Vista Kicks?
Better, yeah. I didn't, I really
but not
didn't,
as good as James Bay.
No,
okay. I could see that.
I really didn't warrant it. Like for me, 70 like is passing. It just didn't quite
not
make
doing
it up
for
there.
You,
it's
huh?
just not up there. No. I need something a little more like smooth feeling when you listen to it. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess.
Not like, just not so like,
not so raw,
not so raw, not so gravelly feeling when you listen to it.
Yeah. He definitely,
I like cream in my coffee, not liquor. Like it's literally comes down to that. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
You smell what I'm stepping in?
I do smell what you're stepping in.
All right.
But, no, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Mm.
That's not too bad.
Yeah. Ooh, that was loud.
Anyway, okay.
Well, first album's done, which means now we get to move on to What's in Your Cup. Burp, 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 burp.
Do, 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 do.
We still need a jingle for that. So what are we drinking tonight? You are already finished.
Yeah. Well, I didn't take a big pour, but I had a pour of Michter's 10-year-old bourbon.
Nice. How was that?
It was really good.
Nice.
I haven't had it in a while, so it's had plenty of time to open up in the bottle
because
it's been open. I'll probably have another.
I can get behind another one too. What am I drinking? I know you poured me something. I don't remember what it was though.
You have.
I think it was Russell's.
It was
Russell Wilson.
Russell's.
Kurt Russell.
Store pick. Single barrel proof.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was a private pick.
Ooh, I feel fancy then. I feel so honored. Private pick.
But it Yeah,
it's very
from
good.
Total Wine in Kentucky.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, did you get that when we went out down to the?
It was a different trip.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I like that a lot. It's a Wild Turkey product.
Nice.
Russell's Reserve is Wild Turkey Distillery, and it's really solid. I like that one a lot.
Hell yeah, man.
It's like Liquid Cherries to me. There's a Wild Turkey's known for its cherry profile.
Do they usually use like a lot of cherry wood with their aging? No.
You can't.
That's not a thing.
Well, you're not allowed.
Oh, yeah, because it's not bourbon.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And it's not a finished product. Plus, I don't think cherry imparts a lot of flavor. Cherry wood.
I know it's good for smoking because it's got a lot of natural sugars in it. So that's...
Well, maybe it would be good for... I don't know. That's a good question. I don't think they've ever made a barrel out of it, though.
I know you can buy charred staves of these like specialized like aging rods. You've seen them, I'm sure. Yeah.
You throw them in the bottle.
Yeah. I'm sure they probably have one of those made out of cherry wood. That would probably be pretty
almost
good.
Almost assuredly.
Yeah. I would totally charred it up,
throw it in there.
Yeah. I told you I made a roast with that bottle of Bordeaux finished
bourbon.
Bourbon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who was that from? God, I had the bottle. I threw it away.
J.W.
Kelly?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a bourbon they finished in a Bordeaux barrel, so it had this like kind of sour, winey flavor to it. And I was like, I got some beef shanks in the fridge. I need to braise off.
I've found over the years that a lot of the things people hype up, A, are not worth the effort.
Never.
B, not worth the price tag.
Never.
And C, I just don't like finished whiskeys. Like most of the time, I'm not a fan.
Just a regular,
especially red wine finished bourbons.
I just didn't. I get why people would like it, or like even red wine aged really, in a bourbon barrel.
I could see it being really good, but like it that particular one did not do it for
was
me.
Was not. I think Bordeaux is just too sugary of a wine.
Mm.
Like you need to do something like if you had a Pinot Noir that was aged in a bourbon barrel, I would totally try that. But it would have to be like a really deep dry wine, because whiskey naturally has a ton of sugar to it.
Yeah,
from the
other way around is good.
Yeah,
wine finished in whiskey barrels is good.
Yeah,
whiskey barrels finished in or whiskey finished in wine barrels not good.
Yeah,
to me, there are plenty of people out there that disagree, and that's
well, you know what?
Them, but
that's your opinion about it. Same as the $20 haircut thing is for me. I don't know if we're gonna leave that in the original, but we don't have to. We can leave that as a Patreon.
We can move that on. We don't have a Patreon. You can pretend like we do, though.
We have a Patreon. It's at Chungus Malloy. You can just Venmo me $20.
Yeah, just send Dan money on Twitter.
Please. Thank you.
I think. Did you see that they do tips on Twitter now?
What?
Yeah, you can like... Creatives do a lot of stuff on Twitter. They'll like put up photos like that. And they take tips.
Oh, okay.
Which is kind of neat.
All right.
It's like, all right.
That's another way for them.
I'm about it.
Okay. Hey, man. Make that bread.
Yeah.
Get that bread. All right. Well, anyways, next album...
Second half.
So we have, you want to scroll my page down a little bit?
Oh, yeah.
Keeper of the Mouse.
Yes.
Gracias. We have the two. So another cool thing is both of these albums came out in 2007.
Bang, bang.
So
2007 throwback episode.
So, yeah. So it's really cool because it's actually the exact same year, exact same time period. And these are still pretty different albums all in all. And we're talking about MGMT's 2007 release, Oracular Spectacular, which love the name.
Yeah.
Dude, that's such
rolls right off the tongue.
Dude, it's such a cool name. It's fun to say, like you said, rolls off the tongue. And it kind of sets the tone of, it's just some kids kind of making some like their pop music.
Yep.
And it's really, really interesting.
Yep. I find this really interesting too.
This album was much better than I was truthfully expecting it to be.
I knew what it was capable of. Obviously, this was my pick for the week, so
yeah.
I knew what I was getting myself into. Right. I knew what I was getting you into as well.
I did not.
I expected this, though, to come across with you a little bit more poppy than you normally prefer.
Very much more poppy, but it was certainly in the realm of where I love, which is like the trancey psychedelic sound.
Yeah.
Because like I'm very big into like jam bands.
Mm-hmm.
So this was more of just like a pop version of a jam band, basically, to me.
Yeah.
So it really vibed. It passed the vibe check. I really dug the album start to end. There were a few bits where I was kind of like, I could take it or leave it, but for the most part, like as soon as Time to Pretend came on and I was like, oh, that's this guy. That's these guys.
That's this one.
That's this
one. Oh,
band.
I know this song.
Right. So that one was like, there's only three songs on here that I had ever heard before, and it's, you could probably guess, some Time to Pretend, Electric Feel and Kids, because they're the only ones that play on like the radios, right?
Yep.
But like they're also probably three of the best songs on there.
Oh, 100%.
Like super vibey, really dancey tunes. Like Time to Pretend's drums, super simple, but they're really, really sweet.
Yeah. They're just really effective too.
It's very effective. It's catchy. It's literally just like bass drum, snare, and hi-hat. Like it's just a simple setup he's got, but he's just jamming. He's keeping time. Everything's just dancing around him. And it just does a really great job of combining like psychedelic synth pop with like kind of some indie rock vibes too.
Mm-hmm.
And they just really, I think they kicked ass for being two kids who are probably like, what, maybe 19 when they released this. I honestly don't know how old they were.
I'll look it up.
But like their album cover, they look like they're maybe 17 or 18 years old.
Yeah, they're really young.
Like they're not old kids. And so they're making an album that's like, I think equally as creative as Icky Thump.
Mm-hmm.
And this is their first album, second album? Debut. First album.
Debut. Yep.
Like 20 years younger than Jack White when he released, you know, the same year. So I think it's just, they're two really talented guys.
They were 24 when this album came
out. Oh, wow. They look really young.
At least Andrew was. Let me look at Ben.
Okay. Well, they looked...
Ben is about the same age. So they were like almost 30.
Oh, wow. Okay. They're much older.
Or 24. Sorry. I don't know why I said 30. Yeah, I was thinking 27. There was a lot of sevens going on, but...
Either way. All right. Well, they looked way younger than that on their album cover. They look young.
Those might be...
those also, actually, now that I think about it, I don't think those are even them.
I was like, I don't think that's them. It might be, though. It could be.
I don't know.
You could convince me either direction.
I don't care that much about it. Either way, really, really dug it. What about you? I know you said you had already known kind of what you were getting into. Was there anything about it that, like, you weren't expecting?
On my first listen or on, like, this...
Like, visit. Just like, had you listened to the whole album before we did the episode? Oh.
I'd not listened to it, like, attentively.
Okay.
Like, I'd not, like, really sat down and pulled apart the tracks and, like, really done any type of deep dive analysis on, like, how it makes me feel or anything like that. But I've certainly heard it a handful of times. I mean, being only 40 minutes long, it checks the box for me in terms of being the right length, I feel.
Yeah.
It plays well.
And so, it's energetic enough that it's still a pretty quick 40.
Yeah,
I agree. It definitely doesn't drag on.
Yeah, and it's funny. I'm actually reading this Wikipedia page on it.
The sweet.
But it says the opening track serves as a mission statement and is the theme continuing through all the rest of the track.
Yeah, it's very...
So like to your point, it does set the tone because it was intended to.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be like, here's what we're about. And
right. This
is what you should expect with the rest of this.
Yeah, and it's if you listen to some of the lyrics too, it's very like party culture, very much like one of the lines is like, this is our decision to live fast and die young.
Yep.
Like that kind of keeps popping up throughout the whole album. Like it sets it up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I dig it.
Yep.
I dig it a lot.
I will say I really like the front half. The first five tracks.
The first five is definitely
good,
the
good,
best.
Good, 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 good,
yeah.
Good. The back half, there are some good tracks. I think two of the five are like solid.
Mm.
The other three are pretty forgettable. I think if I were to leave one off, I would leave off probably Fourth Dimensional Transition.
Really?
I think that's the one I would leave off.
I liked it because I liked that psychedelic sound. That one's really...
Like bubbly. Like, yeah. Synthesizer heavy.
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was creative. I thought it was a bit different for the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like 2007, there wasn't a ton of stuff like this coming out, you know? I mean, or maybe there was and I'm just dumb, but like
I mean, a lot of the psychedelic stuff was in like the 60s and 70s,
right? Like psychedelic rock and pop hadn't really come back yet. Like it was very much, I thought, not really, not maybe ahead of its time in terms of like the trend coming back around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, people have been making psychedelic rock for since
I wouldn't even call this psychedelic rock. It's more like psycho pop
or psych pop. I'm sorry. Yeah. Psychedelic music in general.
It's neo psychedelia.
Yeah.
Indie pop and psychedelic pop.
Yeah.
That's the genres this thing falls in. Genres in air quotes.
Right. But you get what I mean, though.
Yeah.
I'm not a professional. Words aren't my strong thing.
Remember, our mantra, two dudes.
Know nothing about
it. We don't know anything about
this. It's book club.
Essentially.
You're allowed to be wrong.
It's all about my feelings.
It's how much you like it, how you feel about it.
Here we go. Two hipster geeks get some rad vintage keyboards and compose a suite of synthesized heartache.
Dude, that's good.
That's awesome.
That's a great... That's the Wikipedia entry. I love that.
That came out of the Rolling Stone. So Rolling Stone magazine in 2009 named it the 18th best album of the decade.
Wow.
So of the 2000s. And in 2012, they said it was the 494th out of 500 greatest albums of all time. That's where they put it.
See,
six from the back.
Oh, man.
And that's where that quote came from. Two hipster geeks get some rad vintage keyboards, which is totally true.
It's very
true. These are like very like vintage synthesizer-y sounding. And it definitely feels like they came up with most of these ideas in their parents' basement.
Oh, yeah. Like it has a very unique feel to it. Like you can tell that they were definitely... Let's like blow some walls down and try something new.
Well, I think a lot of what they do is experimental in the way that like, I think they play a lot with delay and reverb.
Yeah.
And that they'll just like play a couple of notes and play with the delay and reverb and try to get it to sound like more than it is.
Mm.
Like I think in, which song is it? I think it's Electric Feel. There's like a keyboard line. That's like the hook of the song.
Yeah.
And it's really simple to play on a keyboard, but it sounds really complex in the track because...
They just keep kind of like...
No, because the delay and the reverb replays the sound over and over and over and over again.
Oh.
And it sounds like they're playing a bunch of different notes, but they're really only playing like...
Four.
Quarter notes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's
it's
cool.
It is really cool, but that's the type of thing I'm talking about, right? It's like they're experimental, not with the source of the sound... Right, because like the keyboards are old as shit.
Right, like you have $50 keyboards to work with, make it work.
Or they're like from 1980.
Right,
and they're like the first version of that. I'm you know, obviously speculating, but
sure.
Doing things with that sound that you know have been done before, but just creating within those boundaries to make something new and poppy.
Yeah,
but I think one of the things I most appreciated about the album is how rough it sounded. Nothing sounded polished. It didn't sound, you know, crystal clear. There was still a good amount of distortion in all of the sound. And I think that's intentional because it's not meant to sound like, you know, an early 2000s polished pop record. We're not talking about Justin Timberlake here. We're talking about...
This ain't a justified cockfight, y'all.
Yeah.
No, I think, I mean, I would agree. I don't think it sounds rough. I think it sounds...
Sorry, unrefined.
Unrefined, I think, is a better word. Okay. Yeah, because it's. I would say Icky Thump sounded rough.
This
does not sound rough.
Icky Thump distorted.
Okay.
That's the word I would use.
Okay. Sure. I don't know what distorted technically means.
Well, you know what distortion is?
Not really, no. You know,
like an electric guitar distortion... Like the reason an electric guitar and an acoustic guitar sound different in most applications is because of distortion. They basically just crank the signal through an amplifier.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
And it's basically like clipping constantly.
Okay.
But it's loud and aggressive. And that's where like Van Halen's guitar tone is.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Basically distortion, distortion.
All right.
Anyway.
But anyways, I think Oracular Spectacular was actually like, produced by them too. Like I think they
were. No, there was somebody else there.
What if it was?
They were signed by a record label. There was somebody else.
I think there was one other person. Like there was not a lot of people on roster for this album.
Dave Friedman.
Okay. Yes.
Was the producer, and they actually do have other members of the band. They toured as a five piece.
What?
With a bassist, a drummer, and a guitarist.
Oh well, yeah. I mean, okay.
But yeah, I think they might have done everything in the studio by themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, because like you in a studio, you can do that in 2007. You can't do that on a stage.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, I know you hate Billie Eilish, but like she and her brother make all their music at home.
Yeah.
But like, obviously they have to have help when it comes to the stage performances, else it's really boring.
Right.
It's like one of those like rappers that are like pretty good, but not like Jay-Z level.
Okay.
When they go on stage, they just play a track. Like they have a DJ on the stage that like plays the track in the background and they just rap over it.
Sure.
But there's nobody else there. Whereas like if you watch like the Super Bowl halftime show or something like that, they'll have like drummers and keyboards and guitars and bass drums.
Oh yeah, they're making a show up.
But bass guitars.
Bass cellos.
Yeah, and it's like an entirely different thing. Like they'll have like a track going in the background, but most of it is like made on the spot.
Yeah.
And it just has like a more impactful quality to me. That's sort of how I feel about it.
Okay.
But yeah. I really liked Oracular Spectacular. I did not rate it as well as I had rated White Stripes.
Really?
Yeah. But, like I said, the front half of this album is really, really, really good.
It's really interesting. You and I, typically, I've noticed, favor our own albums whenever we do...
I pick them.
Well, yeah, right. And exactly. And I do the same thing, right? This is the first week that you and I have each been like, I like your album completely opposite. Like I rated Irregular Spectacular higher.
Yeah.
I liked it more. I rated it higher. I truly think it's the better album between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just interesting. It only took us 9 episodes to get there. I expected it to be like season 3 by the time we hit this point.
By the time we finally flip-flopped.
Before I finally was like, all right, I guess Hayden's taste in music isn't total garbage. Nope. 9 episodes.
Yeah.
Wow.
I guess that's a testament to the fact that my music taste is garbage only 8 out of 9 times. That's pretty good. That's pretty good percentage.
That's not awful. And I mean, like a lot of the ones that we've listened to that you've picked is like, they haven't even been garbage. Like we've listened to a lot of really great music so far.
Yeah, but like, they're just different.
It's just really different. Like Octavarium was really great. Chan's album we listened to in preseason was fantastic. Grow by Chan.
Yeah, check that out.
Oh God, what else did you pick? Echo, Silence, Patience, Grace. That was really cool. The Dave Grohl week picks. Both of those were great. Chaos and the Calm. I liked that a lot. I didn't expect to like it as much as I did. So like there's definitely, and those were all
yours.
But that's
like totally, I feel like you have one of two vibes. You're either like garage punk-y, right, but not like thrash punk.
I like thrash punk.
But like you most of the time don't bring that up.
Yeah, that's fair.
You bring up albums like Black Pistol Fire.
Okay, yeah, that's not
like
really
like that's sort of like where it open room sounding, right, echoey, very live mix.
Yeah.
Whereas or it's that or it's like the complete opposite, which is like chill vibes and singer-songwriter type.
Oh yeah, that's going to be chill vibes is another of the themes for next season too.
Lo-fi girl episode.
Lo-fi girl episode. That's gonna be the episode name. That's it. Got it. We're 10% done with next season.
Bang.
Done. That's call it a day, guys. We're done working for.
Let's
now.
Wrap this up here.
All right. but yeah, I've got a fun fact for MGMT.
Hit me with it.
So at Voodoo Festival 2010. Mm-hmm. Voodoo Festival is a big music festival. I'm sure that's probably pretty self-prevalent giving context clues. They actually dressed up as Scooby-Doo and Daphne.
And Daphne?
Yeah.
And it's two dudes.
Yeah. Yeah. Get on their Wikipedia page and just scroll down. It's off to the right-hand side.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. But they're like up on stage. They each have guitars. Scroll down. Right there.
Yeah. That's so good.
Yeah.
It was Halloween.
Yeah, it was for Halloween at Voodoo Fest.
They were characters from Scooby-Doo. Oh,
yeah, not Scooby-Doo
so
and Shaggy. One,
no.
And I can't tell which one is Daphne. So one of them was just like, you know what would be really
It's not funny? Velma, because Velma's the one.
Velma's with the orange the turtleneck. Yeah. Yeah, Daphne's got the red hair and she's the bimbo. Yeah. But so I thought that was, I saw that on their Wikipedia page. I was like, that's a fun fact. I like that a lot. That's hilarious. So what did you think of it all in all?
Well, first and foremost, the fact that 3 of the tracks were like hit singles, I mean, it's really easy to listen to.
Well, they're on Spotify. The Time to Pretend, Kids, and Electric Feel are still three of their five top five played songs.
I mean, yeah.
With an aggregate of over a billion plays.
Yep. That makes sense. I could see
that. With just those three songs, which is nuts.
I think its overall replay value is pretty decent, but for me, it's background music.
Really?
Yeah.
See, for me, it's I need to use the first half of this album to really focus on something and then for like 20 minutes be really productive and then take a break. Because as soon as like Kids is over, I stop paying attention to it.
And yes.
Yeah. Like,
okay. Like that is what happens. Yeah. I lose it after the first
half. Like side B, I'm done.
Yeah. And that's not to say there aren't good tracks because Of Moons, Birds and Monsters and The Handshake are both good.
I didn't like either of them that much. Future Reflections I thought was cool. I loved the bass guitar.
Yeah, that one got like a plus.
I dug it. It was just that really hard bass mm-hmm. that you could just hear just going through the whole song carrying it. It felt really cool. I liked that. Man.
But
yeah, you know, no, side A was for me definitely also way, way better than side B.
Yeah, I agree with that.
What was something that you didn't like?
I mean, Fourth Dimensional Transition and Pieces of What got the worst ratings for me.
Pieces of What I hated. Pieces of What in Weekend Wars I did not like.
You didn't like Weekend Wars?
I hated the singing. I hated the vocals on it.
Hmm. It's understandable.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Yeah, it was kind of like you with when we did Modest Mouse. It was just like I could do better than that. Like, come on.
I mean, they don't pretend like they're good at singing.
That's true.
They're just making noise.
That's, yeah.
Most of the focus still is on the rest of the instrumentation.
I know,
anyway.
But like, if you're gonna make that the focal, did you break something?
No.
Oh, okay. Fine. I just heard something clack, and I was like, oh,
I
no.
turned this, and it turned the whole microphone. And
oh,
it,
gotcha.
It's fine.
Yeah, no, it's just like if you're gonna make that such a central piece to the song by like taking away other things,
mm-hmm.
refine it a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I felt the same way of Pieces of What. So that's really why.
That's fair. I could see that.
Yeah.
So where did you land with a bean rating?
Not
this one.
Not to be a total memer, but I did land on 69 beans.
I mean, hey, sometimes it is what it is.
It is what it is. And that was a very legit. It was a very conscious decision. That was hard.
Words are hard.
Again, it just didn't meet that 70 mark.
Because
that seems to be my average for like good albums are in the 70s and up.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Or like great albums, I should say, are 70 and up.
Like they start getting really good after 70.
Right, like all of the ones through it, like the ones that hit 74, above 70, The Stranger, Billy Joel, that hit a 92. Chumfrey.
Chon.
Yeah, Gracetown by San Cisco just barely squeaked in at a flat 70.
Mm-hmm.
It's good, but the fact that half of the album is super forgettable is not really something I can like forgive.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah.
And it's only 10 songs, but it's 40 minutes. So yeah. Like each song.
I've never wanted to skip half of an album so bad.
Right.
That's not even that long to begin with.
Right. So like it just you had me in the first half, not going to lie.
Yep.
But you lost me after round five.
Yep.
Like it just fell barely short of hitting a great album.
Yep.
You know,
and I could agree with that.
Yeah. What'd you get? Where's your beanery sitting?
197.
Okay. That's not awful.
Is below Foo Fighters.
Yeah. If you put it above Foo Fighters, I would have probably challenged you to fisticuffs.
What did I say? 194. We're slightly better than Toe. Just slightly, in my opinion. Because I didn't rate Toe all that high. Better than Black Pistol Fire. To me, it's better than Justin Timberlake.
I would agree. Because it's only like 5 years later, but it's incredibly more inventive.
Yeah.
Just in terms of like style and composition. Mm-hmm. Just way more thought went into it.
Mm-hmm.
But like Justified wasn't really bad.
No, it was good.
It was good.
I like Justified.
Yeah.
It's a good album.
Well, we did just talk about it last month, so.
Flaming me over the editing process. Dude.
No, it's not even an editing process. We're just both busy human beings with things to do.
Yeah. life comes at you fast.
Right. Like, we blinked and January was gone.
Gone. Now we're halfway through February.
I know. It's crazy. This is nuts. Life is crazy. Crazy, crazy.
All right.
Well, I think that takes us now into my favorite part of the day, which whoop, whoop, is song lyric or shit post, where I read Hayden a line from the internet that I have saved somewhere on my phone that I can't remember which one I picked for tonight. And he has to tell me if it's a song lyric from any given music of any given genre of any given day.
Literally from anywhere.
Anywhere. Or a shit post.
Also from literally anywhere.
From literally any part of the internet.
Ready? It's a very hard game, but my record's like 1,004. So. Yeah,
you started winning too much, so I had to put a 5-second time limit.
I mean, I'm just guessing anyway, so.
I know, but like, I don't like that you win so much, so I got to put pressure on you.
They don't want to see you win, folks.
No, they don't. All right, you ready?
I was born ready.
I could tell Larry David was the mind behind Seinfeld.
Song lyric.
It is a song lyric.
Bang!
Nice.
Can you tell me where? I could literally flip a coin every time we do this.
That's fair. You probably would get it. It's from Travis Scott's Watch.
I don't like Travis Scott.
I saved this long before whatever it is that came up that makes you not like Travis Scott.
The Astro World.
That came up with whatever happened that makes you not like Travis Scott.
Just rubs me the wrong way, dude. All right, man. I don't like that guy.
That's fine. I have my own person.
That's
a W. So now your score is fucking 15,743-4.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something like that.
I've definitely only lost 4 times.
It's certainly much lower than the amount of times you've won. And that's annoying.
Well, all we have to track is the number of times I lose, because we know how many episodes we've done.
Right, but I don't remember when we started doing this.
Exactly. So just keep track of the losses. I have 4.
Yeah, all right, that works.
That's why we just use an arbitrary number at the beginning.
That's like also true.
47,362 and 4. Well, half of it's right.
Half of it is right. That's true.
So, all right.
So we're going to, do we want to announce next week's albums?
Well, you changed yours. So
I did.
If we're going to do that, you have to remember what it's called, because I didn't write it down.
That's totally fair. So next week, your pick was Led Zeppelin 4. If you have to ask who the band is, just get ahead and go to a library. And
get out of the rock you live under.
Right. And the other album is Apostrophe by Frank Zappa.
That's a new one for me. I haven't heard that one. But if you haven't listened to Led Zeppelin 4, something's wrong with you.
Buckle up. If you've noticed anything about my taste in music, you know that I like weird stuff.
Yes.
If listening,
I'm tangentially aware of who Frank Zappa is.
But like,
I've never heard the albums.
But have you ever heard of any, like, have you ever actually listened to a song by him, like, at all?
Probably in passing once. I haven't like sat down and like really focused in on it.
Okay.
You know?
Pro tip: sit down with the lyrics, read them as it's going. It's only like a 32-minute long. It's a short album, so you'll like that.
Like an apostrophe.
Sure. So yeah. And I changed, I did do a hot audible this week because it was originally Back in Black by AC/DC, but I honestly, it just didn't sit right with me the entire time. And I finally settled. I was like, I got to do something better than that. So I'm going to, I'm
surprised you didn't do like Asia or something.
Asia?
By Steely Dan.
Oh.
Like AJA, Asia.
Oh. I don't listen to Steely Dan much, oddly enough.
You've heard that song though, right?
Probably.
Okay. This doubt stuff is killing me. We're going to listen to it.
Okay.
Next season, though.
Next season. S2E1, Asia by Steely Dan.
That's it. Just the one album. That's We're just going to talk about the one album.
That's fine. All right. Well, but yeah. So if you've never listened to Frank Zappa before, get ready to not know what's coming next. Just across the board, it's going to start one way and you're going to take 15 right turns out of somewhere else and you're going to end up somewhere completely different. Just go with the flow, read the lyrics with it, sit down, and just buckle up.
All right. Warning heeded.
Yes. But you're going to love it. I'm expecting high marks. And I'm going to do a little bit extra. I actually did a lot of work with this week because with making the notes template for us to use. And I actually filled them both out entirely. Don't normally do that.
You're done already? With the next one?
With this one.
Oh, okay.
But with the next one, I'm going to put in a little extra effort and I'm going to tell you as to why this album is as good as it is.
It's from 2012?
No, it's from 1974.
Oh, it was really... Okay.
No, I was going to say. It is not 2012.
No way, I don't believe it.
No. This guy, so...
I was like, he's dead, isn't he?
He's dead. He is commonly regarded as the father of what's known as comedic rock.
Okay.
So things like Ween, Presidents of the United States of America, Weird Al also kind of falls in that category.
Yeah, I was going to say Weird Al probably.
Frank Zappa was the first guy to take that style of we're going to make really good music with really stupid lyrics and we're going to put it on an album, but we're going to just do it right. And he does it right in every single, like every song on this album is a banger. Like this
Guess
is,
we'll get into that though.
I'm going to tell you now, this is going to score higher for me than The Stranger. This is going to blow Billy Joel off the top spot.
All right. We gotta back off. You're talking too much. Anyway, next week's show will be one definitely to check into. So definitely be sure to check it out. We're excited to talk about it.
If you couldn't tell, I'm very excited to talk about it.
I can very much tell. Yeah. And I hope that's coming across. But yeah, so
cool.
Good show.
Anything else?
I got nothing
else.
Hit
us up on Twitter. Tag me in things. I'm bored. I don't post a lot because I work all the time and my schedule's fucked. Yeah, should we say that? Should we say swear words?
We've been cursing.
That's true.
I'll just mark it as explicit.
Yeah, sure. That's fine. Fuck it. Yeah, my schedule just gets fucked. But I'm getting a new job, so it's Yay. Going to be more consistent. And Yay. We can do this on a regular schedule. And
yeah.
I can be a human again. And it's going to be amazing.
Downside is sometimes you got to get up at like 3 o'clock in the morning to go to work, but that's okay.
I only work 10 minutes away. It's going to be straight. It's not that
get
bad.
Get up at 4:30.
Yeah, it's not that bad. It sounds bad. It's not that bad. So anyways, all right, cool. Well, I'm Dan.
I'm Hayden.
It was great doing this again.
We'll catch you in the next one.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning into episode 9 of the Setlist Audio Club with Hayden and Dan. If you made it this far, congratulations. You don't win anything, but we're proud of you. And appreciate you taking the time to listen to us. That counts for something, right? Right? Anyways, be sure to tune in to next week's Season 1 finale episode featuring Led Zeppelin 4 and Frank Zappa's punctuation-inspired masterpiece, Apostrophe. If you like the show, please consider subscribing anywhere you get your podcasts. Also, follow us on Twitter at SetlistAC for show updates and weekly previews. If you have any questions, have any feedback for us, or even have ideas for future episodes, feel free to shoot us an email at setlistac@gmail.com or send us a DM on Twitter @setlistac.